And welcome back to Midday Friday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us for the second part of our show. Today, a two-hour Midday Friday special. We're talking about cooking barbecue. We're talking about barbecue, from the best sauces and rubs to use to managing heat to produce the best results. We're taking calls and emails from you, our listeners, so please join us in this discussion. We're heading into the weekend, and you want some help barbecuing. Maybe you're just getting started. Maybe you need to, you know, try something new. You're looking for some new recipes. 410-662-8780. That cough you hear is from Henry Hong.
Sorry,
Henry,
guys.
I know. You got a little cough, but we'll deal with it today because you're our friend and buddy. We're glad to have you with us. And Henry Hong, formerly of Waterfront Kitchen.
Yep.
Now Henry has moved down to the street. He's manager of the Thames Street Oyster House in Fells Point.
That's correct.
When did you make this move? Just recently?
Today.
Today?
Yeah.
You're kidding me. Today's your first day?
Tonight I'll go. I mean, I've been there training and stuff, but yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Is it true you're serving a lobster roll?
It's the winning lobster roll for the nationwide competition last month.
Was it Thames Street Oyster House?
Yes, they beat out
you
all the guys from Massachusetts.
You're kidding me.
No, in Maine. They were voted number one at the Rock and Roll, I forgot what the name of it is, but it was in Manhattan last month, and they got first place.
For lobster roll?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to have to check that one out.
It's ridiculous.
We're going to have to go down.
Yeah. And John Shields is here. Speaking of lobster, you have a lobster special in August
at
Gertrude's.
Lobsterama.
Lobsterama?
Lobsterama. Every Thursday in August, it's all lobster all the time at night. So
wow.
It's a lot
cool.
of fun.
Wow, we can lobster out in the month of August ahead.
Uh-huh.
But we're gonna do barbecue today. I don't know about if we can barbecue. I guess you can grill a lobster, but we'll focus primarily on meat today, beef, pork, and chicken. George Hensler is joining us today, and I'm just learning about George and his gang, his team, his competitive barbecue team known as, who are those guys? That's the name of their team. George, it's nice to meet you, George Hensler.
Great to be here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're in Harford County. You're not a professional caterer of
That's
barbecue.
Correct.
You're just a barbecue guy.
I guess you would put it as I'm a backyard cooker on steroids.
Yeah.
Backyard barbecue on steroids.
What happened, George? When did you get the bug for barbecue?
Well, I've always liked eating it, as you can see.
Yeah.
But what really got me going on it was about 10 years ago, the wife and I went down to the Bel Air Barbecue Bash, which is coming up next month in August in Bel Air. And we just went down. We had no idea what to expect, what was going on. We wandered down there on a Friday evening, and guys were in there. As it turns out, that's when the contest is being set up and so forth. So we were watching guys setting their grills up, cooking within their camp, and just kind of scratching our head, you know, what's going on? How is this a competition kind of a thing? So wandering around and started to chat up with a couple of the other competitors, and they kind of gave me the rundown of what goes on at a contest. So I understood that the main part of the contest was on Saturday morning. So the following day, I got in my truck and drove down to Bel Air, and the smoke, there wasn't much wind as there is on a lot of still August mornings, was just hanging over the town. And I just, all I did was drive around the contest in my truck just with my head out the window like a dog smelling. It was that intoxicating to me, and from then on I've been hooked.
Wow. And you were really intrigued by this idea of competitive barbecue, of teamwork.
Right. The competition end of it would just look like a lot of fun with the guys. I ran into a couple of guys early on in my barbecuing career, as you would say, that kind of took me under their wing and let me cook with their team. And I got a real good sense of what was involved in doing a contest. And I said, this looks like a lot of fun, and eventually started my own team.
It's fun, and it's a challenge, too.
It's fun, it's a challenge, and it's a lot of work.
I know it's a lot of work.
Right.
The challenge to me is getting all the heat right. Of course, the flavors and all, you think you can pull that off in the kitchen. You know, all of us who like to cook in a kitchen, we work at flavoring, right?
Yeah.
But then going to the next step, getting the heat right, the flavor, the smoke right, boy, that, you know, that's to me where the intrigue is,
right?
In barbecue. What would you agree with that, Henry?
I mean, absolutely.
Controlling the heat.
I don't, you know, there's barbecue, like in your book, in George's book, it mentions, you know, everything from grilling on up, but barbecue, talking about, you know, slow, low temperature cooking with smoke is really hard. It's really, really hard to do. Like you said, the type of wood you use, the temperature, the timing, all that. I mean, you know, brining, rubs. I mean,
it's the payoff, right?
Well, yeah.
A bunch of pleased people sitting around eating this thing that you cooked on a fire the old-fashioned way, right?
Right, especially when they get the sauce all over their cheeks and
yeah.
nose.
Some of us have already done that because George treated us to some ribs. You did some ribs today. What else did you bring with you?
That's all I brought was the
ribs.
John brought
that was
the
enough.
Chicken and the pork.
Thank you. Right. I'm very satisfied with that.
The studio smells like
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
I walked in, I was like, what? Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, folks. I wish we had smell radio here.
Odorama.
John, now you got a chef over there, Gertrude's.
Yeah.
Not Doug this time.
No, not Doug this
it's
time.
Eddie Knott.
Eddie Knott, Chef Eddie, Crazy Eddie. He's just amazing. He's like a barbecue fanatic. He was bitten by the bug a long time ago. Has a great big setup in his backyard over near Parkville.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes crazy. So like he was telling us, he was up at 4:30 this morning, low temp. Constant,
getting the fire going.
Getting the fire just right. And so he did these great big, I mean, huge fist size chicken thighs and did some pulled pork. Oh, my God. And he did.
Have you sampled it already?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Is that what you brought in with you?
Yeah, I brought that in. So we'll have some.
Oh, my. Now, is he doing, in the previous hour with Boog Powell, I asked him about that Eastern Shore church chicken that's cooked on the roadside
yeah.
chicken barbecue.
Yeah.
I gotta duplicate that myself. I gotta figure that out, John. Do you have a recipe for that in one of your Chesapeake cookbooks?
No, but I was just talking with George before the show, and I'm doing a new cookbook now. So we're hooking up, and we may have that in that next book.
Mm-hmm. The church roadside
yeah, uh-huh.
chicken barbecue. Do you have a suggestion for pulling that off, George? It's a little different than what you usually do. But what I've seen, I described it before, was a fire and a steel drum. With the chicken grilled, the chicken laying maybe 2 or 3 feet above the actual fire, and all that smoke just rising up through the chicken quarters.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. Up my way, right there in southern Pennsylvania, you get a lot of the Amish guys that do the same thing with the roadside
oh, yeah?
chicken. And so a lot of them have a cooker that's like a big grill, and the chicken goes in a double-sided rack that you can roll it, so it's easy to turn it.
Oh,
kind
yeah.
of on a roller,
mm-hmm.
and which makes it cooking a lot, makes cooking chicken a lot easier because a lot of times with chicken, especially in large quantities, the challenge is not letting it get burned, you know, keeping it away from the heat.
I like that idea of flipping it. Could I do that with a couple of old window screens, as long as they weren't painted?
Probably
right?
could.
Huh?
Yeah, probably could.
Because I swear to God, I saw this on the Eastern Shore, and I thought they had them on window screens.
They could have, yeah.
And
it's
the smoke
compression grating that they
compression
cut.
Compression grating?
Yeah, the steel compression grating.
Tell us more, Henry.
Well, it's that grating that you see. It's kind of like oval-shaped openings. So it's basically metal, a sheet of metal
like
with slits cut
mesh.
Into it that is then like expansion grating, not compression.
Oh, expansion grating.
Expansion grating.
Oh, okay. Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Heavy, you're into heavy metal when you grill. Henry.
Cooker is
Henry, he's industrial strength.
There's only yeah. three bolts in my whole cooker. One for the lid to the chimney and
yeah.
then for the wheels. Everything else is welds. It's like a
yeah.
serious piece of
yeah.
it's a Tiernan Son of Brisket and no, it's a Texas type thing.
Let's go to the phone lines. Folks, please call in if you're looking for some advice about barbecuing. We got George Hensler here from the competitive barbecue team. Who are those guys? He's also a writer, barbecue guru. Totally Q is his latest book, an insider's look at the crazy world of barbecue, of competitive barbecuing. And you had an earlier book called Starting the Fire. Am I right, George?
That's right. Yes, sir. That's a book about how to get involved in or begin your own team in competition barbecue.
And you blog regularly about barbecuing for a couple of different sources.
I write for the Kansas City Bullsheet, which is the monthly newspaper for the Kansas City Barbecue Society.
It's called the Kansas City Bullsheet.
That's brilliant.
And also for the National Barbecue News. It's also a national monthly publication.
Dude, totally into this. And you have some other job. This is not your job. This is just you follow your bliss when you barbecue.
That's right.
Yeah. Joe in Baltimore, we'll take your call. Joe has a question which gets us into a good subject here on barbecuing. Go ahead, right ahead, Joe.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I did have a question. You know, there's a guy at the Fells Point Farmer's Market that's selling this really amazing pepper called jalapeno pepper, and it's like a wild pepper from Mexico, and he's making some dry rub with it. You know, I think he toasts the peppers, adds coffee, sugar, and stuff like that, and it's really very, very good, but I've been using it for barbecuing and roasting, and I kind of find that the taste kind of, I don't know, it kind of gets bitter. I feel like I'm burning the rub. as I cook it. And it's such a good rub that I really want to learn what the best way is for me to use it and kind of keep that really great flavor. I don't know if it has to do with temperature or whether I should put oil or not, or how can I use a dry rub like that the best way?
Well, I would my recommendation would be to check your temperature that you're roasting or cooking at. A lot of rubs have a high quantity of sugar. If the more sugar that you have in a rub, the more chance you have of that rub burning, because sugar seem to burn a little bit quicker on a grill if they're near the high heat. So I would watch what your temperature is that you're cooking at and check the rub for the sugar content. If you're still ending up in a quandary, I would put the rub on at the last minute or, you know, towards the end of the cook. That way you're still getting the flavor of the rub, but you're not burning it.
Henry, want to add about rubs? Because I know you love rubs.
Yeah, I mean, well, first, I just got to say I'm not a fan of coffee and rubs for that very reason. And coffee also tends to burn pretty easily. And texturally, it's weird, too. But aside from that point, I mean, you know, another way to mitigate that would maybe just have a spray bottle, which I always do anyway. You can just have water, beer, or, you know, some like a mop sauce, which is a diluted barbecue sauce, basically. You know, keep the surface moist. That should keep anything from burning. And again, like George said, you know, maintain the proper temperature, not too high.
Hmm.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing with it. You know, roasting in an oven, that's going to be higher temperature unless you're going like overnight or something like that.
Right.
Grilling, then, you know, your rub's going to be subjected to very high direct heat, and maybe you just don't use that rub for that application, you know.
Okay. Thank you very, very much. I wanted to ask George Hensler a question that's similar to the one I asked Boog Powell. The secret to using this indirect heat or smoke in barbecuing, okay? You know what a new Braunfels smoker grill looks like.
Yes.
It has two chambers, a small chamber for fire that's attached to a larger chamber, and the smoke flows through from the smaller chamber up through the large chamber and up a chimney.
Right.
Right. This is very challenging for some people to use this kind of smoker. I guess you got to practice and work at it. What's the key to that kind of barbecuing?
Well, that's an offset cooker, what you have there. And the key,
offset because one chamber is lower than the other.
Correct.
Right?
Okay. And the key to cooking on an offset is temperature control. So you control the temperature by controlling the amount of air that's coming in from the small chamber side. So you have to have a good seal there, and then you can let out as much air as you want. And typically, maybe on the chimney, there may be a flap of some type, or so that you can control the amount of hot air that's being pulled through that cooking chamber.
Okay.
And, of course, then you have to know what the temperature is inside of that chamber.
Okay. So that would be key, then, having a thermometer of some kind attached to the upper chamber?
Correct. You have to know what kind of heat you're making inside of that chamber, number one. And then number two, you have to be able to sustain that heat or make sure that your fire is burning in such a way that the temperature remains steady for an extended period of time.
And what's an ideal temperature, say, for a beef roast that you're going to do in there, like a pit beef smoke grilled?
I like to cook at about 250. That's what I cook most of my barbecue.
That's what Boog said, the same thing, mm-hmm. 250. And Henry, do you have any advice to add about that kind of cooking?
See, because I also have an offset, a cooker with a smoker with an offset heat box. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's very similar to yours. They're horizontal cylinders, basically, one smaller and lower than the other. I've never had really good luck with those. The main chamber never gets hot enough, even if the fuel box is full and burning really, really hot. So I always ended up putting some of the coals into the main chamber.
Into the main chamber?
Yeah, that was the only way I could get it to actually cook with it instead of cold smoking with it. You can do that with, you know, side of salmon or something. Just get smoke into it rather than actually cooking, you know, protein like pork or beef for an extended period of time.
Key is the thermometer, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean,
even before you put the beef, the meat into the chamber.
Yeah, just like baking in an oven or whatever, it's critical to know the temperature, you know, of your cooking medium.
Right. Okay. I've winged it over the years, you know, but that's really important, isn't it, George?
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to mention before we take our first break here, a couple of things on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. John Shields from Gertrude's mentioned Eddie Knott, who's supplying us with some great barbecued food today. I guess it's great. Actually, I'm assuming it's great from the aroma.
Yeah.
I haven't actually tasted it yet. But he also provided some recipes, right, George? John?
He did. He provided recipes for barbecue sauces. His favorite, his all-time favorite barbecue sauces.
Oh, good.
And his rubs. And so that was real nice. And it's out there in the world.
It's out there on Facebook. If you're getting ready for the weekend, we'll go take our first break here. Please feel free to give us a call or send us an email with a question for John Shields from Gertrude's. Henry Hong, now from Thames Street Oyster House in Fells Point, is the manager there and joins us along with John once a month for Midday Eats. This is a special edition of that show all about barbecue because we have visiting us today George Hensler, founder and pitmaster for the competition barbecue team. Who are those guys? Which is a line from Butch Cassidy to Sundance Kid, right? A short break. We'll be right back. Oh, John Shields, you can't do that here in the studio. That's not allowed. That's illegal. John just opened up a tray of the barbecued chicken from Eddie Knott, your chef.
This is the Memphis. The Memphis
sauce. I wish we had a camera in here.
This
is the Memphis sauce?
Yeah. So as the show goes on, we're going to try different sauces.
Unless you're going to make it till 2 o'clock.
I know.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you just take a bunch of phone calls, you three, and I'll have lunch. let's go to Sam in Glen Burnie. Sam, thanks for calling Midday.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I do some, amateur smoking in the summers to do ribs and things, and I'm pretty good at controlling the temperature, at, say, 225, but where I run into trouble is where I want to know that it's done, and I'll put the thermometer in there, and maybe it's just my inexperience. I'm putting it in one place against the rib, and I get one temperature, another place, I get another, and then I start to panic, saying I'm getting different temperatures. I don't know when they're done. And then I just guess. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But are there better ways than the thermometer test to know that it's done, and specifically with ribs? Or am I just putting the thermometer in the wrong area altogether?
Well, my suggestion would be on the ribs. The easiest way to tell when a rib is done, in my view, is the toothpick test. Get yourself a toothpick. When you have the ribs in the raw state, put that toothpick between two of the bones and know how that feels. There's going to be some resistance. It's going to be hard to shove that toothpick through when it's raw. When you're halfway through the cooking process, that resistance that you get is going to lessen. Take your toothpick, push it through there. You'll feel it. When it's done, that toothpick is going to go right through between those bones with minimal resistance. And then you can also, as a secondary test, just grab one of the ribs and just put a little pressure on it. And if it starts to come away from the meat, then you're done.
Very interesting. So get some a memory of what that feels like the first time, but when it's still raw.
Right.
Huh.
And that's if you do it a couple of times, you'll pick up on what you're after. The first time it might be a little bit different, but once you get a feel for it.
What's your secret, Henry?
Well, just real quick thing about the temperature, so ribs are thin. There's not a lot of material for the heat to get through. So getting them up to temperature actually happens fairly quickly. The key is sustained high enough temperature to actually cook, to denature the proteins, to make it tender, right? So that it's not a great test. Like George says, more about texture. One way to do it, I'll take my tongs, and if you're doing a whole rack, is lift it up by half the rack and see if it flops down. If it flops down close to 90 degrees, it's probably close.
Close to 90 degrees?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah, I can picture it.
And then obviously just tasting. Like the entire way through, so.
Hey, John, I appreciate Henry's use of the word tongs, mentioning the use of tongs as a tool for grilling, as opposed to taking a fork. What? Why is that a no-no when you got a nice brisket or whatever going on the grill?
You're gonna lose the juice. You're gonna puncture the skin, and the juice goes out, and it's gonna dry everything out.
Okay. Yeah. And I picked this up also from George Hensler's book, a good reminder about salting meat before you do any of this, before the cooking. A lot of people, they get going with the salt and all their spices and anything they want to add to meat before it gets on the grill, and you don't recommend that.
In my view, the salt will pull a lot of the moisture out of the meat. So if you're going to do it right before it's going on the grill, that's fine. But if you're planning to use it, trying to use rubs as like a marinade or something like that, I would advise against that because to me the salt's going to pull the moisture out of the meat. A lot of times you'll do that and you get your plate out of the refrigerator and you're going to see a puddle on there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
and that would be the case with a steak, for instance,
right,
or a hamburger even?
Same thing. I like to season them right before it's going to go in the grill. I don't like to let them sit with the seasoning on there.
Okay.
But that's my...
All right. Lucy in Lutherville, you're on Midday. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, I've been listening while I'm in my kitchen cooking and hearing you talk about the roadside barbecue stand on the Eastern Shore, and mm-hmm. I might just know the recipe because I looked in the trash can one time.
Uh-huh.
To see what was in there, because they had been mixing it up. And what I saw were lots of empty cartons of egg cartons, and apple cider vinegar, boxes of poultry seasoning, salt and pepper, and some oil, a bottle of oil.
I got everything there except the eggs. I can't imagine
maybe they had that for breakfast.
I think they whipped, I saw this big batter. They whip up the eggs and put all the vinegar and the poultry seasoning, the salt and pepper.
Wow.
And then
I would never think of that, adding eggs to a mixture like that.
Would never have thought of it.
Yeah.
But the coating is
okay, but you're just going by what you saw in the trash can. So,
yeah.
You know.
So maybe you should go and look in the trash can.
Lucy, I really appreciate you calling. Guess I'm thankful for this phone call. Anyway, we'll get to the bottom of that. And if you're working on another Chesapeake,
yeah,
a themed cookbook, John,
absolutely, yeah,
you got to get that in there.
Indeed.
Yeah. What do you like to do with chicken, George Hensley? Your team, who are those guys? Your barbecue team?
I like to just season it really good. I'd like in the contest setting. I'd like to brine my chicken. I don't typically do it at home, but for contest purposes, to try to get a little bit of extra moisture in there, we'll brine our chicken a little while.
And for most people, that means water and salt?
Water and salt, heavy salt, a lot of salt, and just let it take a bath in there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I like to do with chicken, and I do it a lot when I'm cooking at home, is a real easy soak in Italian dressing.
Salad dressing?
Italian salad. You just put it in a Tupperware container, dump the Italian salad dressing in there, let it sit in the refrigerator overnight, and pull it out and throw it right on the grill.
And grill it with, so it's been marinating, and you
right.
grill it. So you're okay with marinating chicken for a long time.
Yep.
Where are you on marinating, say, fish?
Fish, I do the same thing. I'll sometimes mix Italian dressing, regular and a creamy Italian together. And I'll throw chicken in there, although I'm not going to let it in the refrigerator overnight. I'm sorry, the fish.
Will you marinate fish as long as you would chicken?
No, I say I won't do it overnight.
Not
I'll
overnight.
Do it an hour or so right before cooking.
Okay.
Or I'll just use it as a baste and paint it when I'm cooking on the grill.
Hmm.
Same thing.
Henry, do you like to marinate meat before you barbecue, before you grill?
Yes. I like to brine, dry brine. So I think George and I differ on that.
Dry brine, meaning just basically kosher salt?
Yep, kosher salt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, initially moisture does come out, but, you know, it's something called osmotic exchange where, I mean, it basically enhances moisture in the long run. That's just me. That's my personal
preference. And you think that's okay with beef?
Yeah.
What about chicken in particular?
Chicken, it's actually even better suited for chicken for whatever reason. But I was going to say about the Italian dressing, and this is an upstate New York thing, and you were talking about shish kebabs. There's something called Speedies.
I haven't talked about shish kebabs yet.
Oh, you haven't?
I was about to, but go ahead. No, go ahead. Because
I blew you up a little bit.
No,
Dan,
that's all right. It gets us to that subject. What were you going to say about it?
But yeah, Speedies, which is, I think we talked about this before. It's kind of that the name of it derives from spit or whatever. But it's chicken that's been marinated in Speedy marinade. But if you taste it and look at it, it looks exactly like Italian salad dressing.
Okay.
And all my buddies from Rochester and Binghamton, to them, that's like normal. I guess it's just super regional.
And this is chicken that's on a kebab?
Yeah. On these metal skewers, and they have these big parties where, like, it's a Speedy party. And then you take a big, long roll and essentially grip the chicken and then
pull it off the skewer and pull it into your sandwich.
Your sandwich.
Oh, yeah. That sounds great.
Mm, yeah.
That sounds great. I was going to ask about shish kebab. Do you do shish kebab with the barbecue team sometimes?
Not so much in the competition. We're pretty limited to the meats that we have to cook for the contest, but I do a lot of shish kebabs at home on the home grill.
What's a recommended cut of beef for shish kebab?
Well, anything that's tender and that doesn't have a lot of fat. I mean, tenderloin would be my first choice. There's not a lot of flavor in it, but it just eats so good off the
okay. Ears. Yeah, can't go wrong with tenderloin, right, Henry? I was going to say I tried a shish kebab once with what I thought was a fairly cheap cut of beef, a kind of beef that you might use in a beef stew. And by marinating it with in wine and some vinegar, It seemed to soften it up and tenderize it. It worked on the sinews a little bit, and as a barbecue off the grill, it was very tasty and surprisingly tender.
I have a tip about shish kebabbing. So you can get like the square or flatter skewers to prevent stuff from spinning around, especially when trying to turn meat and stuff.
Oh, a skewer that's actually
kind of has a flat cross section.
Yes, and so rather than just a round skewer,
right? And that's supposed to prevent stuff from like spinning when you're trying to flip it, and it doesn't work. So I always use two skewers, so you get a lot more control that way. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's just a little tip.
Very good. Thank you very much, Henry Hong and John Shields, who join us every month for Midday Eats, a special edition of the show today. adding to our guest lineup, George Hensler, who is a barbecue guru, a founder of this award-winning barbecue team called Who Are Those Guys? George lives in Harford County. 410-662-8780. Rich in the Eastern Shore in Dorchester County. Thanks for calling, Rich.
Hey, good afternoon. I have an upcoming bash I'm throwing, and I'd like to be doing two things on my Weber kettle type grill. I got some vegetarians coming, so I'm going to be doing vegetables. I'd also like to do a pork shoulder, if possible, in a Dutch oven under the barbecue, so it's not kind of hanging on the vegetables for the sake of my vegetarian friends. And I'm wondering if anybody has some suggestions to take a pork shoulder from a Weber grill by way of a Dutch oven to pulled pork barbecue.
Well, sounds like a good question for George.
Well, now what I would suggest, certainly, so if you're cooking on a Dutch oven on the Weber, it's basically you're cooking just like you would in your home oven. It's a vessel to cook, and you have to control the heat. So what I would suggest would be to put some, you're going to get a lot of liquid out of the fats out of a shoulder and the pork naturally through the cooking process. There's going to be a lot of liquid, but I would add some liquid at the beginning, maybe some apple juice, beer if you like, or any combination. Water would be just fine if you wanted to do that, but get a little bit of liquid in there. And then maybe an idea, although I've never done it in a Dutch oven, but maybe if you had one of those thermometers with the probe, it's either wireless or it's on the wire that you can see what's going on inside that Dutch oven. Stick the probe inside of the shoulder so you can monitor the heat. And what you're looking for as a finished product to be able to pull it is going to be around 195, 205, right in that range. And the bone, if there's a bone in there, that bone, you'd grab it and twist a little bit, it's going to want to come out of there. And that's how you know when it's done.
Thank you, George. Anything to add to that, Henry? Or
just that,
John?
Be prepared. The shoulder takes a very long time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
very long
patient.
Time.
It's a long cook.
Yep. Very good. Okay. Back to the phone lines. William in Baltimore City. How you doing,
hey.
William?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
I got a barbecue coming up, and I got two questions. One of my questions was already answered in reference to the ribs itself, but the other one, cooking with wood. What do you guys prefer to cook with, and what can I use far as wood to cook everything, pork, fish, and chicken? What would you guys recommend?
Good questions. What kind of wood works with all of those, and what do you fellas like? I'll start with George.
Well, I like any of the fruit woods. I use pecan as my go-to wood. I use
pecan.
It at home, and I use it in the contest setting. But
excuse me, but where do you get it? Is that something you have to special order?
Yeah, I buy it online. Okay. It comes in chunks. Okay. Send it in a box by the pound. That's what I use. I like peach. I like any of the milder type. When you start getting into mesquite or hickory, in my view, and whatever you like, whatever your flavor profile you're after, but in my view, they're a little strong. And so that's why I stay away from those, from mesquite and hickory.
A question before you go on.
Yes.
Now, are we talking about charcoal with wood added or a complete wood fire?
What I do is I use lump charcoal, a quality lump charcoal, and then I supplement with, and you don't need a lot, maybe 4-5 chunks of your wood that you're going to get your smoke from.
Okay.
And if you're on an extended cook, maybe you add them maybe 3 now when you start, and maybe 2 in 3 or 4 hours, because it is going to burn off. But you don't need to overdo it with the wood.
Henry?
100% agree. Okay. Lump charcoal, just because it's more economical. It's more consistent heat. Yeah. And for wood, I prefer apple and cherry. And then, I mean, wood is just a whole another universe of, you know, but so I used to get, there's a debate between green wood and aged wood, seasoned wood, which is better. With the fruit wood, some people think like freshly lumped cut wood is still has those essential oils and contributes flavor. You know, that's so you can get at Home Depot now these nice big bags of chunks of apple and cherry. Now, they're not the best pieces of wood. There's like lots of bark and stuff. So you have to be, you have to kind of pick through it. But those are at least commercially available, if, you know, or otherwise go online to some boutique place.
I just noticed you mentioned bark. You don't want, so you don't want bark in a fire that you're using to cook food with. Is that generally true?
Typically, I don't want it in there. I'm with Henry.
Yeah, what's the issue with bark?
I think it makes it bitter?
Or?
I think it adds it just gets too strong. Again, I'm chasing a milder smoke.
Right.
So that's just one of the things I do in order to get to where I want to be.
I'm with you.
And that's the secret to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Know what you, you know, stay consistent. So if you use, if you're cooking today on something and you use, let's say, Royal Oak lump, and that, and then you add pecan to it, and you're happy with the product. Well, the next time you cook, you know, don't switch to Kingsford briquettes and some other different kind.
Right.
Stay consistent. Know what works on your cooker.
Right.
You got to
go
know your
it.
Cooker.
Right.
And stay consistent.
And how often are you going to do this? I mean, I know some people, they grill in all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you do it once a week, it's going to be special. You want to, you're going to put the effort into it.
Right.
You want some great results. Right? John, this one question you might want to take about grilling vegetables, and I know that George wants to add something on this. This is Howard and Art Butis had a question up in on this realm. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Ross. I understand. I appreciate that barbecuing is mostly about meat, but I like to get those same flavors into vegetables and seafood, and of course, I also like to grill fruit. I wondered if the group had any recommendations for vegetables and seafood.
Well, vegetables and seafood's like all over the place. Especially summertime, we have, you know, the eggplant, you have the zucchini, you can put tomatoes.
This is a great time right now, isn't it?
Work that in there. And then you have the fruit that's wonderful. You know, the peaches are out right now, apricots, just absolutely beautiful. And fish, of course, anytime. I love
John,
fish.
I had campfire s'mores made with peach instead of the graham cracker. So it was marshmallow, the chocolate, but with two slices of grilled peach.
Ooh. Oh,
how's that sound?
That sounds awesome.
Well, it was awesome. It was very good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so,
So you can go crazy.
By the way,
grilling
vegetables such as, say, you got a lot of squash, zucchini, and onions or whatever you've got there, and tomatoes.
Yeah.
Do you recommend putting this on the grill directly, or one of those, I've seen these mesh wire, not wire, but metal mesh, I don't know what to call it, perforated metal.
I mean, vegetable
holders. I don't know what you call
them.
Yeah,
and they are. They're vegetable holders, and they make
what
them like.
What do you call it, Henry?
They make them like for fish, too. They make them like
fish
holders.
They make them for fish, too.
Yeah.
Is that better? Or?
It works and makes it very neat and works very nice, but they're not necessary.
Okay.
You can work right off the grill with it. I do, like, if I'm going to use squash or if I'm going to use eggplant, I do salt them ahead of time and take a little bit of the water out of it when I've cut it. And then I maybe put it into a marinade just for a little bit, dry it off, and then
How about the slicing? How big do you want these pieces to be?
Well, I usually go about a quarter to half an inch thick for most of the vegetables I use.
One of the recipes George Hensler from Who Are Those Guys shared with us is grilled asparagus.
Yes. You know, we just went through the spring. Asparagus was aplenty. Still, you could still get it. I saw it at our farmer's market there in Bel Air. Some guys had it this past week, but not as much as we saw earlier. I just like to take it, you know, cut the big white off the bottom, you know, break it however you want to take that end off, put them into it on a sheet pan, olive oil, salt, and pepper. Take it right to the grill. You don't need a lot of time. Sometimes just to get the grill marks on there. And you're
what else? What
better
would you do this weekend? Mid-July, heading into August. What are you looking for in the next couple of weeks?
Grilling some tomatoes and zucchini, like John said. Same thing.
Can you tell me about grilling tomatoes? I just see something dripping through my through the grill. It doesn't sound good to me.
What I like to do, and now, I don't get me wrong, I'm a tomato nut. I love a fresh tomato.
Same here.
Right. So, but you just take them and halve them, and then olive oil, salt, and pepper. I like to start them off with on the
open skin, side?
No, on the skin side down.
Skin side
so that
down.
It's kind of like a cup. It's not you're not losing a whole lot. Get them, you know, I mean, what say, done? You know, just cook them a little bit, get some marks on them, and roll them over just to get some char marks onto that cut edge and take them off.
All right, just a couple of seconds on the, maybe a minute
you
on
don't
the
need much.
Cut edge?
And
okay.
Then depending on the tomato that I'm using, sometimes you might want to pull the skin off, but other times you just keep it. You can keep it on there, and a lot of times, once you take it off, chunk it up, chunk those asparagus up, like I said, mix that together, and that goes as a great cold salad at a picnic.
Oh, yeah. Grilled and then cold.
Sure.
Oh, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. John, I asked you about the slice of vegetables, such as squash, for instance, because I've had too many slip through the grill on me.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they can get away. You know, we didn't even mention corn, but, I mean, corn's a great thing. Sometimes you can just, a lot of times, I'll just take that and soak it in water while it's still in the husk,
sure,
and then put it on the grill, and it just gives it a great flavor.
How long would you soak it?
I'd leave it in there for about 15 minutes, half an hour.
And then right on the grill?
Right on the grill, and it kind of steams it, but you still get some of the flavor from the grill in there. It's nice.
Let's take a break. Some more questions for our guest, John Shields from Gertrude's, Henry Hong now from Thames Street Oyster House, and George Hensler, who is a barbecue nut and really knows his stuff. And he writes about barbecue. He's got a couple of books out. The latest one, this is the newest one, right,
yes.
George? Totally Q, an insider's look at the crazy world of barbecue, available from Foodways. Is that the publisher, Foodways? Is it on Amazon, the book?
It's on Amazon, yes.
Okay, Totally Q. It's all about his competitive barbecue team. 410-662-8780. Welcome back to Midday Eats. Our barbecue special today. A question from Jessica by email. She says, I'm a woman who is interested in getting into grilling and barbecuing, but barbecuing seems to be such a man's job. To George, are there female grill masters out there? How would you suggest someone who has never done outdoor grilling before get into it? Well, that's two different questions. First of all, you see women in competition at barbecues, and then how do you get started doing this?
There are women in barbecue. A lot of them. There are a few women pitmasters. Diva Q comes to mind. She's out of Canada. She's got a couple of TV shows. She's very, very popular in the barbecue circuit. If you just Google Diva Q, you'll find a ton of information about that. And getting started in competition barbecue, I'd suggest going out to a contest and just seeing what it's all about.
Do we have one coming up? Well, you mentioned the one in Bel Air. When is that held?
That'll be August 8th and 9th, coming up next month.
Well, there you go,
in
Jessica.
In the town of Bel Air.
And you just drive north on Route 1, and when you see a lot of smoke.
Put your window down. When you can smell the smoke, pull over.
George, before we go on, I want to ask you about another recipe here that you shared with us. Moink balls. M-O-I-N-K balls. This is from Who Are Those Guys? The competition barbecue team. Henry Hong, the food nerd. You ever heard of moink balls?
Sadly, I have not.
Okay. So this is special if the food nerd doesn't know about it. What's a moink ball?
A moink ball is very simple. It is a beef meatball, wrapped in bacon, toothpick, put on your smoker or grill. When it's just about done, and you could put some rub on it to start with. When it's just about done, baste it in barbecue sauce, let the sauce finish, take it off, eat it off the toothpick. Moink balls. Moo and oink.
I get it.
Moink.
Moink. Moink. Oh. You know, that does sound pretty good. Of course, you wrap bacon around anything, we'll eat it. But that does sound pretty good. Just a little bit of the sauce at the end to finish it.
So very easy to make, too.
And this recipe is on your website?
Yes,
Of the Who Are Those Guys website?
WATGBBQ.com.
You get that, folks? It's WATG, Who Are Those Guys, BBQ, barbecue.com. That's George Hensler's website. Before we go on, we're going to take a couple more questions about barbecue here. We just have to take a moment to meet Justin Daniel, co-owner of Pop Couture. Pop Couture these are gourmet vegan popsicles. Now, we're all enjoying talking about meat cooking on the grill today. It's a very meaty hour that we have, a couple of hours here. But Justin's out there with his partner in this business, and we thought we'd hear a little bit about it because it'd be a great way to finish our barbecue meal is to have a nice, cool popsicle. Justin, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
When did you start this company?
We've been at it about 3 years now.
What's a vegan popsicle? So it must be, what's, it's not made from asparagus, I assume, but...
No, we haven't come up with one yet, okay. But that doesn't mean we won't try it.
Well, what's a vegan, meaning what it means, right? There's no...
Yeah, we don't use any dairy.
You don't use any meat. Oh, you don't use any dairy. Okay.
Yeah, they're all, really it's, they're frozen fruit sorbets, just in the shape of a popsicle.
Great.
We realized that Baltimore just has access to incredible summer produce, incredible berries, stone fruits, and we wanted to do something fun, get outside in the summer, be around happy people, and decided to start making these about 3 years ago, and it's been going great since.
So did you just make them at home at the start?
Well, at the start, my business partner Pete Stein and I had both been making ice pops just as for fun, for dinner parties, for Pete, for his kids. And I was making baby food for my son, tried to keep it interesting for him, mixing, carrots, beets, all sorts of different things. And we would freeze the extras so we would have little cubes ready to go. And as anybody who has a young child knows, sometimes you're just that desperate. And I tried eating one frozen once, and it tasted pretty good. And I decided, that a lot of these flavors, even though the ones that incorporate vegetables and things that you might not normally expect in a traditional, popsicle, as people are used to them, make for fantastic flavor combinations, and they can be a lot of fun.
So do you do this full time now?
No, my business partner and I are actually both attorneys. This is our avocation. This is what we like to do.
A lawyer by day, a gourmet popsicle maker, vegan popsicle maker by night.
That's right, and on the weekends.
And I must say, I got a photograph. I haven't seen your little, this isn't actually a truck, is it? What will we call this?
It's licensed as a food truck. That is a three-wheeled motorcycle, essentially. But yeah, we ripped the back off, put on
cool
a commercial
looking
freezer.
It's green, and is that purple or blue?
That's purple.
Purple, okay. And where do you travel about? Where might people find you?
Well, today we're at Artscape with the other food trucks down there, but typically we take that to all of our different farmers markets. We travel around the streets, downtown Baltimore, different festivals and events.
That's a great way to finish off a meal. So we have a couple of recipes from Justin Daniel and his partner Pete Stein in Pop Couture that we're sharing on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. So thank you for that. The most popular being chocolate banana,
It's been really popular since the first time we made it. I think that one of the things that really, I think, sets our ice pops apart from what people are used to finding in a store is texture. I'm a big texture person when it comes especially to sorbets and desserts and things like that. We took it upon ourselves to track down equipment made in Brazil that freezes the ice pops at negative 25 degrees just because we wanted a finer grain ice instead of that chunky kind of ice that you get in a standard region freezer. But different fruits definitely have different textures as they freeze, and I chose the two recipes that we're sharing just because even in a region freezer, bananas and pineapple in particular do pretty well, and they have a nice texture when they freeze. Chocolate banana is a great combination, and we blend ours together. We just take really nice ripe bananas, mix it with 100% cocoa, a little bit of simple syrup that we make out of organic sugar, and that's really all there is to it.
Wow. When my kids were little, I was making strawberry popsicles in the summertime. That seemed pretty easy. That was just a matter of putting them in a blender and freezing them in those little trays that you can buy for popsicles. I mean, I guess you did something as simple as that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember putting much sugar in them either because strawberries are so sweet.
Exactly, and that's one of the reasons that we at the start made a commitment to try to track down great local produce, because when you can get it locally, you can wait for it to be nice and ripe. They don't harvest it as early. It's just got all that sugar already in it. There's no need to add a lot.
Hmm. So do you make one last question, because we have to get back to barbecue, Justin. Do you make enough popsicles in the summertime when the produce is local and fresh, because it keeps, right? You can freeze them theoretically for several months, right?
Yeah, they'll keep for about a few months. Right now, we don't do anything in the winter with the business. We're just around for the summers.
Okay.
And we do what we can, but typically end of September, beginning of October, we wind things down.
Where are you parked at Artscape, or do you get to move around?
There's a food truck zone, actually, right near the MEA stage, right over by the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall.
Okay. And look for it. It's green and purple, Pop Couture. And Justin Janney will be there, working there this weekend?
No, it's today only. So
only today,
yeah,
okay.
Just today here at Artscape. But then we'll be at the JFX Market.
Are you vegan? Are you vegan?
No, I'm mostly vegetarian. I eat a little bit of chicken and fish from time to time. But
chicken?
Yeah.
What do you think of that chicken there? See that chicken?
It smells pretty good. I was
noticing
before
you
were
looking
about
at
the smell in here.
I noticed, Justin.
You didn't lie.
I was wondering if how the vegan was going to do in
I'm
here
just
in Studio A.
Nobody's trying to eat me.
Listen, thank you very much. We're going to take a couple calls while you're here. Henry Hong's still here, and George Hensler and John Shields. Michael in Hampstead, go right ahead. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Hey, listen, I was wondering what you thought of former Baltimore Colts player Andy Nelson, his barbecue up on York Road in Cockeysville. I know he's from Alabama, and he does that 12 to 15-hour slow-cooking vinegar-based stuff. Have you guys ever had that?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah. I happen to be a fan, so
I've
always enjoyed what I get at Andy Nelson's. How about you, George? Have you tried it?
Yes, I anytime I'm over that way, I always stop in. Years back when I first got in it, they used to send the team out to Bel Air and compete. But yeah, anytime I'm on York Road around lunchtime, I'm stopping in.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Terry in Harford County, go right ahead.
Hi. You guys were talking about the Speedies before, and just, you know, if anyone is interested in making them at home, you certainly could make your own marinade. But there is a Speedy sauce from the Binghamton area. It's called Rob Salamita's State Fair Speedy Sauce, and it's available here locally. I've seen it at the Walmart in Abingdon, as well as the Wegmans.
Thank you very much for that information.
Good tip.
In the Portuguese Festival in New Bedford, Massachusetts, takes place the first weekend in August. They have these spears that are used. They're like 6 feet long.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that.
It's amazing. That's coming up. I wish I could go. I'm not going to be able to go. And they make these amazing shish kebabs. I don't know what the Portuguese word for shish kebab is, but it's skewered marinated beef, marinated in Madeira wine, cooked over long pit over a long time while people are drinking wine. And it's just a great festive thing. So if you're up in that area, look for that.
In Madeira, huh?
Yeah, in New Bedford, Mass.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Portuguese wine. Festival. Yeah, the Madeira wine makes it sweet.
Interesting.
Sweet. Okay, so Totally Q, an insider's look at the crazy world of barbecue, is George Hensler's book. George Hensler, one of the founders of the competitive barbecue team. Who are those guys? Where are you competing next? Do you have someplace locally?
Yes, we will be at the Maryland State Barbecue Bash in Bel Air, August 8th and 9th.
Okay, that's the one you mentioned.
Yes.
Okay, so just drive toward Bel Air, August 8th and 9th, and look for the smoke and smell the smoke. Roll
that's
down
right.
the windows. Okay, George Hensler, thank you very much for being here with us today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank, again, Henry Hong for coming in, and I hope you're feeling better.
Thank
and good
you.
Luck to you in this new job down on Thames Street.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, and John, please thanks Eddie Knott. Thank Eddie Knott for us. For,
I will.
For getting up early today to do this barbecue for our... For us, for the staff here at midday. And John, we'll see you again. John,
all right.
John
Thank
Shields,
you,
of course, from Gertrude's. Henry Hong, now Thames Street Oyster House, joins us once a month for Midday Eats, our foodie contributors to our show. And I hope you enjoyed our program. And maybe we'll see you at Artscape this weekend. Try to get a popsicle from Pop Couture if you're down there today. And have a great weekend. And if you're going to barbecue, yeah, if you were thinking about it, I hope we gave you some inspiration to go out and give it a try this weekend. We'll see you on Monday, folks.